Welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. We're coming to you from Rio this week, with the Vertical's Micah Lee and I do an autopsy on USA Basketball's gold medal winning run, and we talk about where Carmelo Anthony ranks among the greatest USA Basketball players of all time. All right, let's go.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your host, Chris Mannix.
All right, another episode, Vertical Podcast, Chris Mannix, here with Michael Lee, who is wrapping up his Olympics coverage, gold medal game. Mike, how many Olympics is this for you?
This is number three, but this is actually be number two that I end, standing upright instead of in a hospital bed. So,
whoa, hospital bed?
Hospital bed. This was a weird Olympics for me because it wasn't just about covering the games. It was really kind of personal because in 2008, it always stays with me, the gold medal game against Spain, which people say is one of the greatest games ever. I spent the entire second quarter doubled over in a toilet because I came down with a really bad illness just from China in general. There was a lot of bad food, bad water, bad air, a lot of things just combined to where my system had completely shut down and my body shut down. So I wound up in the second quarter, Mark Spears, I told him I wasn't feeling well, and he came to come check on me, and I was just really weak and I couldn't move, and he helped carry me to a stretcher. I wound up going to the hospital, and it was amazing because I was totally conscious of what was going on, and I kept thinking, okay, well, I'm sure I can get back by the end of the game. I'm still thinking I can cover the game, and I remember I had passed out, and they put me in the hospital, and I'm got wires and all these things on me, and I wake up and everybody looks at me and they say, how you doing? And I remember the first thing I said was, what's the score? Because in my mind, I'm thinking I'm going to jump right back in. I'm fine. I'll be able to jump right back and get there for the end. Because in 08, I felt like I had something snatched away from me because I had covered the entire team. I had covered the 04 team that lost in Athens. And I had covered the 07 FIBA Americas team that qualified. So I was like really invested in seeing this whole thing completed. So when I got sick, I was angry, but I still felt like I could get it done. I feel like I just got to get back. I already know everything about this team. I can write the story, but they wouldn't let me leave the hospital. So,
and now you only have a embarrassing story to tell. Did you really fall on your ass at a press conference?
I did. I wanted to provide a little comic relief for everyone in there. They're getting a little too serious, asking these sappy questions to, Melo about his last Olympics and Coach K, and I was like,
none of that's true, of course.
It's getting a little too sad in here. So
what happened?
Oh man. Well, actually, I was trying to get a question in, and I didn't get called for a question, and I wanted to pack up and get going. So I reached for my bag, and as I reached for my bag, man, a little flimsy chair gave on me. I wound up falling on my butt, and I'm looking up, and I see Melo and KD just dying on the podium, laughing. And, so I served my purpose. I was able to help, bring some joy to NBA All-Stars. And, so I sat there, everybody's looking at me like I may have collapsed and died again like I did in
you've got a rep.
In China. I do have a reputation. And so I just gave him a thumbs up and slowly got up. And fortunately, I'm fine. And Durant and Melo came back, gave me a good little ribbon on the way out. And they checked on me, make sure I was okay. But I give everybody a thumbs up. I'm good.
All right. So they're in a good mood because, third straight USA basketball gold medal. And how did we get here, Mike? I mean, a week ago, it was panic mode. We were at level 9.5, talking about disbanding this team. I hear people calling for college kids. How did we get here a week later, and now we're talking about a gold medal?
It was amazing, because like you said, last week, they barely beat Serbia. Serbia lost on a last second shot. They could have tied it, sent it to overtime, and everyone's like, hold up, this team is not what we thought it was going to be. And then right after that, you figure, okay, they're going to wake up, and then they play a really close game against France. And then, it gets to be money time. And then all of a sudden, Kevin Durant sort of starts putting his imprint on the team. I think that is kind of what had to happen because he had been so passive, in the games that were really close against Australia and Serbia and France. He just was kind of there, but not really there. but he put his imprint on that game against Argentina. Defensively, you know, Coach K finally made the adjustment of, you know, putting DeAndre Jordan in the starting lineup and, you know, bringing Paul George and Jimmy Butler playing together so they can harass the guards and force turnovers and get out on the break, because they just had such an incredible advantage athletically. They had the depth advantage. You figure if you just press a team and run them, you're going to, you know, impose your will and you're going to win. And it took them five games to sort of figure it out. I just think it's amazing that the last three games of pool play, they won by a combined 16. And then the last three games of this entire Olympics, they won, they quadrupled that separation and won by 64. So it's just like they had to go through some growth and figure it out. And you can't underestimate the fact that they had only been together for a month. And Coach K had only dealt with half of the guys on the team. They had 10 new Olympians. So it all had to come together. But, you know, they got the gold, and that's really all they wanted to do. And they got it.
It was impressive because, you know, when I saw a possible matchup with Spain, a possible matchup with the winner of Australia-Serbia before the Serbs blew them out, I could see a loss there. I mean, I wouldn't have predicted it, but I could see a loss in that mix. I mean, is it just – was there anything strategically that they did, or was it just the rotations that, that Coach K found out?
Well, the rotations, I think, was the key, because I think throughout the first couple of games, you know, you're sitting there watching and you're wondering, why are they having five offensive players out there on the floor together? You got to have somebody out there who doesn't care about shots, who just wants to do the little things. They put DeAndre in there, and all of a sudden you have a balanced floor now. You know, you don't have to worry about trying to feed DeMarcus Cousins inside. You know, you just
DeAndre's Coach K doesn't really love throwing the ball inside much, does he? That's just not his thing.
No, it never really has been. And, you know, but it works, though, if Boogie's coming off the bench, and then he can just abuse second-unit guys, which is what happened, as long as he's not getting foul trouble.
You know? Was he like this month? Was he happy, Boogie?
He was great.
Was he?
Oh, man, he was fantastic.
See, that feeds into my theory that you put DeMarcus Cousins on a winning team, it's worth the risk. If you get him, he's not going to be this wacky guy he was
a second. His frustration is all rooted in you know, losing. I mean, he hates losing, and he can't handle it well. He can't hide it. But I think the greatest example of his maturity here is that he fouled out of two games and, like, was in foul trouble the entire, you know, I said he was going to get the Tim Duncan FIBA Sucks participation trophy after this, because all he did was just collect silly fouls, or maybe he was getting abused and he would react and he'd get fouls. But you know what you never saw? You never saw him overreact. You never saw him get in the ref's face and yell and go crazy and go berserk, which is what we routinely see in the NBA. He's leading the league in texts all the time. And he kept his cool, but they were winning, you know. So even though he had one game where he fouled out 9 minutes, didn't raise a fit, just sat down and let DeAndre finish. And I think that it's proof that if you put him in a winning environment and a winning culture, he's going to look good and he's going to not be this malcontent. You know, I think the environment he's been in Sacramento has sort of, you know, encouraged a little bad side of Boogie, but this you got
that's
to
very
see.
Diplomatic, because I would have said it's poisoned the well
absolutely
a little bit there.
Yeah,
I mean,
to say
come
it,
on,
yeah, yeah. But I mean, even after the
how many coaches has he played for at this point?
Like almost one
Five.
A year, almost, right? He's had one almost one every a different one every year. But I think that here, you know, just being around these guys and having a chance to just have some fun. I mean, I think the image I'll always carry from these Olympics when it as relates to Boogie or DeMarcus Cousins is that when they open a ceremony, you know, I think DeMar DeRozan was like filming a selfie with Kyle Lowry, and then Boogie starts coming behind him and starts doing a little dance, doing a little samba dance right behind him, you know. So like, he was in good spirits, he wanted a chance to win. And you know, for a lot of these guys who've never won anything, never won championships, you know, being a part of a gold medal winning team, that could change your reputation. It could allow people to see you as a winner. We've seen it all the time with Carmelo. You know, for all the criticism that he gets during the NBA season with the Knicks, you put him on Team USA, he's international Melo. He's the most, you know, decorated men's basketball player ever with three gold medals. He's the all-time U.S. leading scorer, now the all-time U.S. rebounder. And
I love that, putting him back in the game to get that rebound.
Yeah, and, you know, and Coach K's praising his leadership. You know, Jim Boeheim's praising his leadership. Jerry Colangelo's praising his leadership. And the players have this respect for him, you know, and I think for a lot of them being around him, you know, they get to see what he's about. And it's just amazing how you can have basically an entire career and be defined in two different ways, just being in Team USA and then being in the NBA.
I thought Klay Thompson for a while was going to take that Tim Duncan Award, the FIBA Sucks Award, because I don't know what it was, but the first week, it's, you know, it looks like the three-point line's uncomfortable. It looks like the ball isn't comfortable leaving his hands. Something was going on with him that first week. It was fixed, but early on, it looked like he was a mess.
He was out of rhythm. You know, you figured it would sort of be the same situation in Golden State where he just gets the ball.
He had open looks.
He had open looks, but he forced a lot of shots, too. I think the fact that they didn't have a lot, the kind of ball movement that he's used to, a lot of times he'd be like, okay, well, I haven't touched it in a while. I got to put it up because I don't know when I'm going to get it again. And that sort of seemed to be the way things had been going. It was like, your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn. And everybody was going one-on-one. There was no cohesion. And the assist was just one pass. It was like one pass that led to the three. But it wasn't like a lot of passes that led to the open shot where you got the defense, the defense didn't have to move. And I think you could, talking to some of the other teams, like they all recognized the U.S. was not playing well. Like they just said, they're not playing well. And you don't often hear other teams just openly say the U.S. isn't playing well. But they always had to think they have the most talent. So even though they were struggling, I don't think anybody felt that they really had a chance to beat them. They just knew that if they could catch them when they were slipping, that maybe they could luck up with a win. But the U.S. got it together at the right time.
And this was not a great field that the U.S. team went against. It was a sea-level field.
It was, and I think that's one of the reasons why, coming in, I thought this was just the last three games were kind of indicative of what I thought the whole tournament would be. They just blow out these teams and wouldn't really be challenged because the field just wasn't there. Argentina's getting older.
Is it possible that Argentina's gone 14 years with this group and developed nobody behind them? Like, how is there not a second generation to replace the golden generation? It's one of the great sports mysteries. I know it's not big basketball in Argentina. There's other sports, namely soccer. In Argentina. But, my God, these guys came along in like 2002. They were these baby-faced kids kicking the crap out of the U.S. team in Indianapolis.
Absolutely. And you had, like a guy like Manu who would just be, totally a role model for guys.
Absolutely.
If you see him winning 4 championships with the Spurs and he's just one in the Hall of Fame, a lock. And like you said, there was, 8-7 pros off of that 2014 that won the gold medal. And you just figure, okay, there's going to be a pipeline eventually. And now it's sort of like it's all on Campazzo, the point guard, who looked pretty good.
But good player.
He's not going to be, seen as a great player.
No.
I think it's sort of this whole thing with international hoops in general. Because I remember, 10 years after the Dream Team, you had Yao Ming in the league. And, he's the first, non-U.S. and trained, number one pick from another country. And you're thinking, wow, either it's going to lead to some more great players coming from overseas, or you're going to see more players from China. But now you have Yi Jianlian and really nobody else that's really come into the league since then. And it's just really, there hasn't been no Chinese pipeline. So you see how special a Yao is. Dirk, it's taken a while for Dennis Schroeder to get over here from Germany. There's really no German pipeline, considering how great he is. Even with Spain, they've had a great generation as well, with the Gasol brothers, and then, Ricky Rubio's kind of be the guy to lead the next wave, but there hasn't really been...
Who is the next wave there?
There's no wave with Spain. So when you look at this field, it was like, okay, France has got a lot of talent, but they're not playing well as a team.
That was pathetic. How France played in this tournament was pathetic. They should have been the co-favorite after the U.S. team. With all the NBA guys there, young, prime. Absolutely.
Nicholas Batum just got, his max deal with Charlotte, Boris, Tony's playing, his last one.
Gobert in the middle.
Oh, my gosh. I thought that they were going to be right there with them. But once they got, throttled by Australia right away, I was like, I don't know if these guys really wanted to come here and play, They were definitely easily the biggest disappointment of this entire tournament because then when they get to the quarters, Spain just runs them off the court. And I thought Tony gave the best line of the entire Olympics when he said, I felt like Spain was the Spurs and I was on the other side because they just ran a clinic, just ball movement. But they also didn't compete. And the only time they came to play was against the U.S. And I think that was the fact that was the one time they really came to play that sort of made me a little worried about the U.S. because they struggled with them and Tony didn't even play the entire game and Nando De Colo sat the second half. So I had some concerns about where the U.S. was going, but it's amazing to see the turnaround and how, these guys were nervous. They you could sense the vulnerability with them. You could hear it in Paul George. He was easily, for media guys, he was easily the guy who was I mean, him and Tim, Melo, Durant, they were so stand up, and but he was so open and frank. Like, he would say, you know, we're winning because we have talent, or we're not playing as a team right now. And he was just laying it out there for us what the problems were. And I think that, you know, having a chance to just, you know, reflect on some of their struggles. I think one of the more underrated things that happened, you know, that kind of helped turn it around was, you know, once they barely beat France and everybody's sort of in panic mode about where the team is, Krzyzewski gave him a day off, and a lot of guys went to the beach and they played beach volleyball. And I felt like it could have been viewed one way or another. If they lose, everybody's like, look at these guys. They don't take it seriously. They came here on vacation. They're drinking coconut water and playing beach volleyball. Like, they don't even care. Or you could say they just needed to get their mind off of basketball and just unwind and just relax. And the day after, everyone said, you know, that's what we needed. We needed to just kind of just remove that stress, remove, you know, the weight of, you know, having to win and having to dominate and having to be this perfect team. And you saw a difference in how they went out and performed. I think that, you know, if they lose, we pounce on them. But since they win, we can look at that as sort of a turning point for them.
I thought they really missed Chris Paul this tournament. And look, LeBron is the best player in the world. Don't get me wrong. Yep. But having that floor general out there, that on-court leader, I thought that was lacking. I mean, Kyrie is special in his own way. Yeah. Kyle Lowry, the same thing. But Chris Paul, with his Olympic experience and with his just natural skill set that is playmaker first, scorer second.
Yeah.
I thought they really missed him out there.
Yeah, they just needed somebody who could calm them down. You know, when things got rough. You know, I remember during one stretch I'd asked Durant when they were struggling, it's like, who's the guy that you guys look to calm you down, settle you down when, you know, situation is like, you get a little rattled? And he's like, Coach K. You know, Coach K is going to be the guy. You know, he's going to be the guy to encourage us and push us. And I found it interesting, you know, because a lot of times on the floor, you need somebody else who's going to say, hey, okay, I hear you, coach, but I'm running things on the floor. We're going to get it settled. And, you know, Chris, you know, he wasn't here, and he obviously is one of the best leaders, you know, in the league. And he would have been able to just say, okay, forget this. I'm going to make sure KD's going to get shots right now. Okay, I'm going to make sure Melo gets shots right now. Or, you know, or I'm going to attack my guy on defense. I'm going to get a steal. We're going to get a break. Hey, DJ, here comes the lob. And, you know, like I said, Kyrie's special in his own way. He's and one of the great one-on-one players in the game. He's a phenomenal scorer, and he's clutch. I mean, he proved that in the finals. He also proved it in the game against Australia. You know, when it's money time, he's going to be the guy to take and make the big shot. But in terms of, you know, running a team, that's where he's lacking. You know, LeBron is the guy that's going to play that role on the Cavaliers. And he knows it. He knows that Kyrie's a special scorer. You know, he likes to put the point in point guard. But in terms of leading the team, you know, I also thought a player who could have helped too, obviously we could go down the list, LeBron.
Yeah.
But I thought that James Harden, to be honest with you, I thought he could have used this experience in a lot of ways. Because if you look at that 2014 World Cup team, Kyrie got the MVP. But I thought James Harden was a consistent best player throughout that tournament because he always found a way to hit the shot, make the play that could, you know, silence any rallies from the opposing team. And he's a playmaker, and he's a facilitator. He could do so many things on the floor, and I'm not quite sure exactly why he chose not to be here this summer, but I thought it would have been good for him, you know, in terms of image building and also building off of, you know, playing for, you know, your international teams. The benefits just, it's amazing you look at the benefits, because after that World Cup team, Harden is right there in the mix for MVP. Steph Curry was on that team, wins the MVP. You know, if you look down the list over time, the guys who play and participate in Team USA, the next year, that guy's going to be the MVP. You can start from 2007 with the FIBA World Cup. You had, the FIBA Americas, Kobe won MVP. 2008, LeBron won MVP. You know, 2010, Derrick Rose won MVP. You go to 2012, LeBron won MVP. 2014, Steph Curry wins MVP. And now you get to 2016. It'd be interesting to see who wins MVP next year. The way Durant looked,
yeah.
You know, I know people may want to hold it against him that he's playing on maybe a super team now, but he'd probably be my favorite going into 2017, you know, to win MVP, because he's going to go into training camp fresh. He's going to go in, you know, in shape. and he's probably going to be angry and a little upset about being cast as a villain. I'm interested to see how he uses this experience next year.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
And now a word from Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts out of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/Mannix. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
What was this 3-week stretch like for Durant? Because, you know, coming into it, it was all negative mostly.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, Durant's a hard guy to really, for a lot of people to really smack that hard. He's not the villain per se.
Yeah.
He's just too nice a guy.
Yeah.
He's hard enough to criticize in that way. But it was mostly negative. It was especially after Russell signed his new deal. It became, well, Durant's a quitter and, you know, Russ is staying with the team. He's gonna stick it through and be with his guys. What was this month like for Durant? Not just being here, but also being here with two guys in Thompson and Draymond.
I think, you know, I think one of the players who was here that probably is a little underrated, his presence, is DeAndre Jordan. I didn't realize how close these guys were and what their relationship was like, but you know, he told me that, you know, he's his best friend in the league. And, you know, if he had a wedding, you know, today, that DeAndre would be in it. And I think, you know, working out with him, you know, hanging out with Melo, being around Draymond and Klay Thompson, just being around guys in general, he actually told me that this was therapy for him because he expected a reaction. He didn't know it would be as negative as it would be in terms of him just picking a team and all of a sudden it becomes a character assassination.
He needed it too, because if he wasn't doing this, he'd still be working out, but he'd be on Twitter. He'd be like looking at his mentions. I really believe he'd be wrapped up in some of this stuff and, you know, not questioning his decision, but too worried about the outside noise. Being here, I think, you know, I think he's dead on. I mean, he knows himself obviously more, but yeah, I think he's being genuine there.
It gave him something to focus on. It gave him something to, a goal to set. You know, again, you know, he came off a really tough loss, you know, game 6 and game 7 against Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. And then, of course, he's vilified for joining the team that beat him. And then you come here and it's like, okay, now I get a chance to get a gold medal. And I think it's really, you know, for like the guys, the Warriors guys that were here that, you know, lost, you know, in the finals, blew a 3-1 lead, getting a gold medal, sort of a way to, you know, you're not going to make up for it because that was a ring they probably should have had.
Yeah.
And they blew it, but this sort of softens the landing a little bit. You know, going into the next season, they, you know, Draymond and Klay have gold medals now. But you know, for Durant, I think it meant a lot too that two of the last three games he was able to really, you know, remind people just how special he is as a player. And that, you know, while people think that him being on a team with all-stars, he might not fit, he can fit in just about any system. And not only can he fit, he probably can stand out in any system. And I think the thing that was fun too is like he pulled up from, you know, from like 35 feet, you know, from one of the threes he took, and I'm just like, I think he's tuning up to play horse with Steph Curry, you know, because playing Serbia doesn't matter now. He's got to get ready to go shoot around with Steph. I think that's going to be fun to see those two guys play together, and they might even have a horse competition during the game. You know, that's what I'm waiting on.
Let's talk about Carmelo. 3 gold medals now. A bronze medal from 2004, all sorts of individual records, one of which he eclipsed at the end of the game today. I think he's the greatest U.S. player ever. I know there's David Robinson is on some people's list. Michael Jordan, who was part of the 84 team and that 1992 team, certainly strong argument that can be made.
I lean toward Mike.
I'm with you. LeBron, he's got to be in the conversation as well. But I just think for the totality of it, for being part of every team since 2004.
Yeah, I mean, he's
dedicated. And even coming back this year when all of his peers decided to pass on it, add that to the statistics, that for my money makes him the greatest U.S. player ever.
I mean, yeah, you got to think about the commitment that you have to make. I mean, this is 12 years now that he's committed to being a part of USAB, and nobody else has made that kind of sacrifice. I mean, to be, you know, on four Olympic teams, a world championship team, and a FIBA Americas team, qualifying team, I mean, that's a lot of summers dedicated to winning basketball. And I think that I talked to him about it a little bit and just what this experience has meant for him. And you think about some of the mistakes he made early in his career, you know, with the stop snitching video, he had a couple of DUIs, you know, things that a young guy kind of goes through in the league, and he had to take a lot of hits early on. But USA Basketball kind of saved him in a lot of ways because it just provided that shelter where he could come here, no pressure. I mean, that's one good thing about being a part of this is that, I mean, you have pressure to win a gold. I mean, if you fail, you're going to be, you know, embarrassed, you know, forever. Like the 2004 team is always mentioned as the team that didn't get it done. But he could come here, he could be around his buddies, and he could really form friendships that really last. I mean, you think about the Banana Boat crew with LeBron and Chris and Dwayne Wade. You know, they got together in 06, you know, they committed to this, and they lost in Japan, and Krzyzewski made a reference to it after that loss to Greece. You know, Carmelo is right there during a press conference, you know, not making any excuses, you know, saying that, you know, he wants to get back and he wants to, you know, get it right. They come back with the Redeem team, they get it done. They come back in 2012, and think about this, he came off the bench in 2012, and had a 37-point game in 14 minutes, you know, so he sacrificed a lot. He sacrificed his time, sacrificed, you know, his body, but I think also he took a back seat in 2012 so that Durant could be the starter, and he came off the bench, played a role, and played it well, and now he's got a chance. He's got three medals, and he told me that he wouldn't trade any of these medals for a ring. Because he understands the value of being a part of this program and his influence on the program. So say what you will about his NBA career, for what he's done in being a part of USA Basketball and helping to restore America's place, you know, America's supremacy, you know, in this sport, you have to tip your hat to him. And I think that, you know, that's something he can always hang his hat on if he retires without a championship. You know, I think that he's assured a Hall of Fame, you know, career because he has these gold medals. He has the NCAA championship. He has the 9 All-Star appearances. He has the scoring championship. And for, you know, failures in the NBA, I think some people can overlook it. I mean, fans are going to be fans. They're going to be hard on them. They're going to be critical. But I think overall, he can look back at this part of his career and say, I did something special.
He was probably a borderline Hall of Fame player, or on track to be a borderline Hall of Fame player without the Olympic experience. I think with it, he's a lock. Yep. I really do. Because you got the Syracuse. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. People sometimes get that confused.
They do.
It's not the NBA Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. So Carmelo being the guy on that Syracuse team, Carmelo, what he did in the NBA individually, and what he's done on the Olympic stage, he's a mortal lock, in my opinion.
And he's such a different type of player here because, you know, for all, you know, like I said, he gets a lot of criticism because in the NBA, he's asked to do so much more. He's asked to create for himself. He's asked to put the ball on the floor and dominate the ball for several minutes or whatever. Here, it's just catch and shoot. You know, somebody's going to penetrate, drive, and find him in the corner. He's going to score. He doesn't hold the ball very long. He probably, you know, needs about 5 seconds or less, and it's coming up. You know, either may take one dribble and shoot. But it's not like it is in New York or even in Denver where he had to do a whole lot just to get his shot off because he's getting double teams. What double teams is he facing here? You know, and that's I think he's thrived on it. And he told me the other day that one of the things about being around the best players is that he knew he had to elevate his game if he was going to be, you know, separate himself or be, you know, stand out. And he's done that. And I mentioned the impact that USA Basketball has had on individual players' careers. Look at Melo's track too, and how participating in this has helped his team. You know, in 2006, after that, he wound up making his first All-Star team. In 2008, the year after that, he leads the Nuggets to the conference finals for the only time in his career. 2012, He comes back. The Knicks all of a sudden win the first division title in 19 years. So who knows what the Knicks are going to be in 2016. Maybe Derrick Rose is right. Maybe super this team. Is a super team.
Super team. The image of Carmelo Anthony is indelibly changed as a result of these last three Olympic cycles. I mean, if he didn't have this experience, he would just kind of be, you know, it's not to insult a Charles Barkley, but he's this generation's kind of Charles Barkley, this, you know, producer who just can never seem to get a ring. Now, Charles had more playoff success, obviously, than Carmelo did. But this,
MVP.
That, of course, but this is the guy that put up numbers and didn't get, you know, get that ultimate prize. Being here, though, he's a winner. You know, here, three straight cycles, he is a winner. Yeah, he is a world champion.
And he can look at LeBron and Chris and say, I got three gold medals. Where's yours?
Yeah.
You know, and LeBron.
I doubt he's saying that.
And LeBron said, I got three rings, buddy. What you got?
I don't think he's saying that.
I mean, you know, the guys talk a little smack to each other. You know, he got to be able to say something.
But do you, I mean, I really think that now people look at Carmelo a little bit differently. Now, you know, the Olympic experience kind of, the glow of it wears off after a month or so. And then everybody's back focused on the long NBA season. And what are you doing in the playoffs? But, you know, I think on some level, however small it may be, the perception of him is changed, in, you know, forever.
I hope for him it does, because I think that a lot of times people don't appreciate how good a player is, and we get so caught up in the rings, and like your only value is if you have rings, and
appreciate too what he has to work with and what he has to deal with.
Yeah,
I mean, in New York for the longest time, he didn't have
no point guard.
No, I was going to say competence in terms of the people that were
building,
you know,
the team.
LeBron had Pat Riley for a lot of years, and Pat Riley is, you know, one of the best executives in basketball. The Knicks, there's been just all this kind of turnover from coaching to, I mean, they gutted the team to get him, you know, when they acquired him in 2011.
And then stripped it down again
while he was there. Changing it on the fly. I mean, it's the circumstances have been difficult. Now, he's contributed in some ways to it because he hasn't always been the greatest teammate on the floor to play with. But, you know, I look at the situation he's in, and if he had the exact same type of support as LeBron James had from Miami on, where would Carmelo be?
Yeah, or if he had a Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh to play with. I mean, obviously, you know, all the talk about he should have been on that team before Bosh did. He could have, maybe he could have a ring now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the one thing that he said to me interesting too is how close he is with LeBron and Wade and Chris, but how competitive they are, you know, and how they are able to, you know, step on the floor and just go at it, you know, with each other, but know that, you know, their friendship is really what matters to them more than anything. And I think we get caught up as fans wanting our players to hate each other, and we want rivalries. We want blood wars just out there on the court. But I think that, you know, they have a understanding that, you know, we're going to compete, you know, and I don't think anybody can question the games they play. They go at each other. But once they're off the floor, you know, there's a brotherhood there that just can't be, you know, denied. And I think it's something that we all had to get used to, you know, something that we all had to learn to appreciate, because we didn't understand it. You know, when LeBron decided to go play with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, I didn't get it. I didn't understand why he would do that. But, you know, this Team USA experience, they formed that bond, they formed that connection, and they were like, I want to be with this guy, playing with him all the time, because I know it's going to work out. And we see it now with Durant joining the Warriors, you know, before he playing with, you know, Steph Curry and Andre Iguodala in 2010, you know, they connected, you know, and that led to, you know, the greatest free agent, you know, move since LeBron, you know, occurring. And a lot of that's because of Team USA Basketball.
I can't wait, you know, 3 years from now to read the backstory about who moved where because of what happened in 2016. Like, it's, you know, DeAndre talking to Kyrie Irving, like, you know what, man, we should really team up someday.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm done in LA, or when LeBron leaves Cleveland again, I'm going to go join up with you. I'm waiting to hear that backstory. Cause you're right. That's what we heard back in the early days of this USA Basketball run with Melo and Chris and LeBron. These guys talked about the possibility of one day playing together, and they used their free agency to do it.
Yeah, because I remember in 08, LeBron had given this great speech before they went off to training camp. They brought everybody in to Vegas and the hotel, and LeBron stood up and basically said, you know, anybody that's ever had a complaint about what their team doesn't have, you don't have that complaint anymore. You know, you don't have a point guard, you got Chris Paul now. You know, you got Kobe Bryant now. If you ever worry about somebody who can't score on your team, like, whatever flaws you may have on your team, none of that's existing right now. And, you know, it was like this great speech that really set the tone for that Redeem team. And I think guys, you know, really started to appreciate each other. And the friendships they formed on this team in particular, like, it's really unique. You know, DeAndre Jordan had the entire team, you know, over to his house when they were in Houston. They brought, you know, everybody over. You know, his mom, you know, cooked a little bit. She had a couple little food was catered. And he's got Draymond Green at his house. And you know the history with the Warriors and some of the things Draymond said about Doc Rivers and just their rivalry. And he's like, 6 months ago, I never would have thought I'd have Draymond Green in my house, you know. And now he's like, I got a friend for life now. And, you know, again, you know, people will look at this situation and be like, how in the world are they going to be friends? And how is this rivalry going to play out on the court? But I think, you know, talking to, like, Jimmy and some of the other guys on the team, they feel like, and Draymond, that, you know, the level of play is going to be intensified now because they are friends. They talk to each other. And you always want to be able to say a little something to your buddy, you know, to rib him a little bit and let him know, yeah, well, I got you on this night. So I think we're going to see probably more intense games, you know, when the Warriors and the Clippers get together now because these guys actually know each other.
So what's the future now for USA basketball? Because, you know, this is the third gold medal. It was a little bit tougher than maybe they would have liked, especially early on. Did this Jerry Colangelo, with Greg Popovich coming on board, does he have to do anything different? Does he have to tweak things any at all before the 2020 Olympics begin?
He will, and he spoke about it, you know, immediately after the gold medal game, that they're going to have to make sure that they don't come to another Olympics with 10 new guys or 6 new guys altogether. I mean, you know, they want to make sure that there's some continuity with the program and making sure that, you know, guys that commit can commit, you know, at least two summers in a row, you know, so where you're not just – you have a big pool, which is what they've done. They've been able to establish a pool, and all the guys want to be a part of it because it's a status symbol now. In the past, everybody's like, man, I don't really want to do that. I want my summer to myself. I want to be with my family. I want a vacation. I want to do – you know, but now it's like you're offended if you're not on the pool. Like, you're angry. Like, oh, what? It's like almost like an all-star selection now, and guys want to be a part of it. So I think that, you know, when Pop comes on board, you know, next summer, you know, and then they get ready for the Worlds in 2019 – they want to make sure that, you know, that some of the guys that, you know, invested in the program this year will be back, and then they got to qualify for the Olympics in 2020. So, you know, having that group come right back in 2020, I think that's what's going to be special, because, you know, guys aren't going to just show up. You know, guys are going to have to invest time to make sure that that they have, you know, continuity. It won't be like the 2004 team, you know, where they went and qualified in Puerto Rico in 2003, and then nobody showed up because they all just, you know, got hangnails and everything else they did.
Oh, well, so I was going to ask you, because can you stop guys, like, take Kyrie Irving, for example. You know, he's young enough to want to be part of the team again in 2020, but, you know, for the sake of argument, and I think this is a reality, he's going to be playing deep into the playoffs for the next few years. Probably. Is he going to want to be part of a qualifying tournament in a couple of years? Is he not? Is he going to want it, what LeBron had this summer, just a summer to himself, take it off and relax?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that'll
and
be
if he does, what do you do? That's the whole thing. Because you do, I agree with you 100%. Yeah. I think you need to tell these guys, you've got to be part of the team for at least, you know, the world championship, the summer after, and then the Olympics. Because they are always going to be susceptible defensively to teams that run complex offenses. Because the only way you can learn defense, or at least become a great defensive team, is playing together. These guys had 4 guys on one of the top 2 all defensive teams in the NBA. They had the best NBA basketball defensive mind in Tom Thibodeau on the sideline, and they still look lost out there at times. And the only way that can get better is if they play together. I mean, is there a hard line in the sand that Jerry Colangelo can draw there, or what's the solution?
I don't think he can, because I think they know that these guys are making a sacrifice, you know, but you want to just maybe provide some incentive in some other ways. I mean, I know that, you know, mentioned Kyrie, you know, he will have a shoe deal. So if Nike's still in charge, I'm sure they will want to make sure he's here or in Tokyo to make sure they can sell the next Kyrie shoe.
New market.
Yeah, you got to market. You know, that's what this is all about. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, 2 of their signature athletes are here, you know, selling a shoe. And then, they get, you know, so, you know, KD has his shoe. And, you know, so I think that plays a role. You know, have the corporate guys, you know, give them a little nudge. But I think that, you know, overall, just I don't know if there's anything he can do other than just try to talk to guys and convince them to do it. But it really is something that they're going to have to do. And I think, like, we talked about Melo being special. That's the thing. Like, he decided to do this. You know, LeBron decided to do this. Chris Paul decided to do this. Those guys committed to just coming back and coming back, coming back, and, you know, and sacrificing their summers for USAB. And you just hope that you have another generation of athletes who looks at that and says, I want to do that too. And I think so far that's kind of what's happened. They're building a program, and guys want to be a part of it. And you just hope that there's some turn, you know, some guys come back. You know, it's interesting because I'm wondering where the next wave, what the next wave of talent is with the U.S. You got Anthony Davis, you know, obviously as being, you know, one of the new faces coming up. But, like, who are going to be those younger guys now who are, like, 21, 22? Like, is there a superstar there in the making that's coming up that'll be there in 4 years? Because you think about it, Kevin Durant's going to be 31, you know, in 2020. I'm sure he'll probably try to give it a go again. But, you know, most of these guys, you know, Klay Thompson, you know, they're going to be a little older, you know, going forward. And so you're going to have to, you know, add in some new guys. Kawhi Leonard, you know, you figure with Popovich around, that should be
locked in. Locked in.
That he'll be a part of the team. And it'd be interesting to see how he fits in an international system. You know, it's going to be intriguing, but I think the main thing is if you look around the world, Serbia is going to be around probably in the future because they have a nice young squad. Lithuania should be around going forward. Canada, you think at some point is going to...
Well, I'll tell you who scares me. It's Australia.
And I was about to ask.
Because they're really scary. Because 4 years from now, what does Ben Simmons look like? What does Dante Exum look like? Potentially does Thon Maker look like if he goes as the ability to play for them? Because if I'm Jerry Colangelo, I get my core players or the guys I want in like a group text. And every time that Dante Exum goes for like 18 and 12, or if Ben Simmons has a triple double, or if Thon Maker in year three, you know, develops into a Giannis type of player, I'm letting everyone know that this is happening. Because those guys, and Bogut's a little bit older, but maybe he can come back for one more cycle. He was the heart and soul.
Yeah, and I think that the way they lost in the bronze game, I think a lot of those guys are going to be so furious that they probably want to come back. Yeah. Like a Patty
probably not.
Mills.
Well, Patty's a little bit older now. I mean, isn't
he's 20. He's the same age as Durant.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe he can come back for another one.
So he might want to come back for one. Dellavedova might want to come back. But I think that some of the guys are older. But I think for the most part, you add those new pieces with some of these veteran pieces. It's I think Australia is the team you got to look at going forward. I'm still waiting on Canada because I think they have a lot of talent in the league. They could be like France where they just have so much talent, but it just doesn't come together.
Yeah, you got to want to play in this thing
too.
Yeah,
and right now I'm still waiting on Wiggins. You know, because you know I mentioned you know Karl-Anthony Towns now already committed to the Dominican Republic. Yeah. So it'd be nice if you could just add him to the mix, but he's not going to be in the mix. And it's crazy that. When are we going to have another American-born number one pick? You know, we've been waiting for a while.
Mike, I appreciate it. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, man.
That's it. My thanks to Michael Lee for joining the show. As always, you can download this podcast and other archive podcasts on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, check out The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and The Vertical Podcast with Woj. We'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.